Hey, Dog Walk listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What if the golf ball you're playing isn't the number one ball for you? Meet the all-new TP5 and TP5X from TaylorMade. Whether you prefer the softest five-layer tour ball in the TP5 or the fastest, that's now a half a club longer, in TP5X, you'll be playing a golf ball that performs like it was built just for you. Available in white, yellow, and picks, you can personalize it with my symbol. No matter which you choose, every TP5, TP5X is designed to help your game. Head to TaylorMadeGolf.com today to find the number one ball for you.
Hey, what's going on there, pal?
We saw you at the hockey game on.
Do I know you guys?
I'm Ryan Whitney. I got a drink named after me.
Not a big deal.
Pink Whitney? That's what I thought. See you, fellas.
I invented the thing, you pigeon.
Pink Whitney for legendary moments.
All right, Big Bang. Today is Thursday. It is March 23rd. Welcome to the Dog Walk presented by Barstool Sports. Today I'm joined by Zoom by a Twitter account I followed. So this is all like once the takeover happened, Twitter made that For You page. And this account kept popping up. And it fascinated the shit out of me, okay? It was called The Car Dealership Guy. And that's who I'm joined by today. And I don't know what it is, but the way you talk about the car game and the markets and where things are going, you really do a fantastic job. So thanks for joining me, Car Dealership Guy. I'm happy to have you, and I'm excited for this conversation.
Eddie, appreciate it. Thanks for having me, and it's good to hear that the Twitter algorithm likes what I have to say. I like that,
dude. The algo's heavy for you, like no joke. It was. I couldn't, because remember when he first did that too, and you couldn't, like you had to manually change it. All I saw was you. I was like, fuck, I guess I'll give this guy a follow. Like he's, like people are telling me like he's tailor made for me. So
yeah. I love it. Yeah, it was when Elon took over, I would say late December, early January, it was just bonkers. You know, gained like around 200,000 followers in 45 days. And so it's been great, but I'm enjoying the ride and, you know, sharing insights and just, you know, doing it in my voice, staying true to my my nature of, you know, not being dry and sharing it just like how I would in real life. So it's been a good journey.
Yeah, it's awesome, man.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
And just so people know too, so you do have this anonymous persona as well. So you're behind like this avatar. Can you get into it at all? I understand like there may be reasons why you can't, but can you get into it all? Like who you are? How'd you get into it? What's your background here with all this?
Yeah, I'm happy to share a brief overview. So, you know, my background has been in the car business for my entire life. Started in, you know, just working around the car lot. I really grew from there through, you know, all the typical dealership ranks, which as you would say, whether it be sales, financing, service, and pretty much, you know, vehicle acquisition, management, and whatnot. Over time, I went into executive leadership, formed a couple companies along the way, but really I've just been a car guy my whole life. I've been intimately involved in the business. I've just been deeply intrigued about what's been happening the last couple of years. It's been an extremely fluid market. People don't know what's going on. Everyone is thirsty for knowledge. And when I launched this account, I didn't have any grand plans. This wasn't me launching and saying, I'm going to be this massive account, share insights, data. It was really for fun. I launched it. I said, hey, you know, I'll be anonymous for two reasons mainly. I thought that number one, it would just get me a lot more credibility, right? Because I'm not selling my book. You can't buy a car from me, even though people request all the time. I maybe accept it 1% of the time, and 99% of the time I say no, or I don't respond, frankly. But the point is, you know, I said, hey, it's going to bring a lot of legitimacy if I'm just anonymous. And then the second thing, frankly, it was also some sense of personal insecurity. You know, as someone that's never been active on social media, it was very weird for me to come into the world and say, hey, here are my thoughts. Here's what I think. You know, I was initially worried about, will there be some retaliation from the industry? Who knows? Now, what I've realized since then is that no one gives a shit about you. No one cares what you say. And frankly, I'm a lot more comfortable projecting my thoughts and views to the world by this point. But that's really, you know, how it started. And, you know, I have publicly declared that I'm going to go non-anon, as they say, later this year at some point. So pretty excited about that. But again, not rushing it, just, you know, staying true to the craft, sharing my thoughts and going from there.
Yeah, no, that's great, man. I understand your desire to be, you know, as objective as possible, right? So that I can respect that for sure. So you're right, too, about it being a crazy time. And I was fascinated over COVID with the chip shortage and whatnot. And, you know, you drive past some of these lots and they'd be, you know, maybe half full, maybe, you know, mostly a quarter full because everything was so crazy. So that's what's cool. That's kind of what we're going to get into today, because like we talked about before the interview, you're not kind of into being like, oh, how could I show up to the dealership and get a better deal? Like, that's kind of a different conversation.
Yeah, I do. I try to be very balanced with my insights. So, you know, I share stuff that's interesting to consumers that are just looking to get a better deal. I share stuff for investors that are looking to invest in stocks. You know, I share stuff for dealers that are just looking to run a better operation. So I think that's the unique thing. If you follow anyone who follows my tweets and just content, you'll notice that, you know, there's this constant flow. It's almost like dealers, investors, consumers, memes, and it kind of cycles and keeps going. And I think that's what helps me also expand the reach of that account, because I'm not just, you know, as a super small niche account. Rather, I try to appeal to different pockets of the market with different types of content. So, you know, I'm happy to touch on all four segments today, including, you know, consumers and on certain things that can be helpful to consumers.
Cool. So let's get into the market right now. Okay. The new market. I see you talk all the time about new versus used. The new market or the used market for someone looking to buy a car right now, what would you suggest?
So we are in an environment right now where I'll give you just a couple stats so you know where the forces are at, and then, you know, we'll get to the answer, right? But first of all, since 2020, we've underproduced roughly 8.6 million new cars, right? So typically in the U.S., we're selling around 17 million new cars. And then 3 years later, those cars, you know, come off lease and or they enter the secondary market. It's the used market. The problem we had since COVID and these supply chain disruptions is that we underproduced 8.6 million cars since 2020. And now that's having ripple effects all throughout the economy, specifically on the used market, but also it's had major effects in the new market. And so new versus used is very tricky because today, you know, the new market is not what it was a couple of years ago. The average price of a new car just hit an all-time record in January. It was right around $48,000. Right, that's the average price of a brand new car, right? So if you think about that, how can the average person afford that? So naturally, lots of people are gravitating to used. Now, the problem with used, of course, is that because there's such a lack of supply, right now, just to give you specifics, right now in the market, we have 2.2 million used cars floating. And if you go back 2 years ago, or sorry, if you go back 4 years ago to 2019, that was about 2.9 million. So we have 25% fewer used cars on the road, which is bringing the prices of used cars up. And so new cars are at record highs. The cost to produce a new car is at record highs. Financing is a lot more expensive, which is increasing the monthly payment for the average person. And used cars, because new cars are so expensive, people are flocking to used cars, but there's not enough used cars. Mm. So where do we go from here, right? And the reality is that we're creating, unfortunately, we've created a car market that favors people that have money or have good credit. But if you don't have much money to put down, if you don't have at least decent credit, you know, you're sort of SOL and you're going to really struggle to find a car at an affordable payment. So it's very, very tricky time right now for any consumer in the U.S. to buy a used car.
And on that,
a new car for that matter.
That's a good way to put it. I mean, these people are getting priced out of new cars, and then the supply for the used cars just isn't what it was. So that kind of leaves us where we are, where people are asking for astronomical amounts for their 15-year-old car that has 200+ thousand miles on it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I post memes and, you know, some images and funny anecdotes and whatnot all the time, and you know, you'll see these you know, these just crazy listings. And I posted a Honda Civic the other day. I think it's a I forget the year, but it's, you know, maybe 7 or 10 years old, like no bumper, faded, 180,000 miles. Someone's asking $4,000. And the funny thing is they'll probably get it or close to it. And again, we were talking about a car that just a couple years back was, you know, $500. And so I think that, you know, any car under 10 grand nowadays is not being valued as like, oh, this car needs this or that, or, you know, this part is broken, or this paint needs, this needs to be repainted. All these cars under $10,000 nowadays are just being valued as, you know, four wheels and an engine. Will this get me from point A to point B? And I'll pay almost whatever it takes because I need to get from point A to point B. So that's the reality that we're facing right now.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that because I did see a tweet that you had as well. So say 10 grand and below would be maybe the lower level. And what's like the medium price range, would you say? 10 grand to...
The medium price range of a used car?
Yeah. Like what would... Because I did see at this point, in your opinion, it's most worth it to buy those medium level vehicles, correct?
Correct.
The best value.
So I think the sweet spot, and again, they say sweet spot, you know, it's tough to even say that, but if you, you know, where, when you get to the $20,000 to $35,000 range, you're entered, that's near the average of what a used car sells for in the US, and there is still going to be the most supply in that range. And so specifically, or there's going to be more supply than anything under $20,000, because the higher you go up in price, the more available supply there is. And so naturally, the better, you know, quote unquote, price relative to value that you can get. And so these cars under 20 grand, there's just the lowest supply out of any, you know, between new cars, used cars, any used car under $20,000, just very, very limited supply. And you will overpay relative to, you know, what it's worth today in the market. Now, when you're entering $20,000 to $35,000, it's a bit different. There's more supply. You know, the average used car in the U.S. sells for around $25,000 or so. And so you're just, you know, that is roughly the spot where it's still, you know, somewhat affordable for some people, and you can find something reliable, lower miles. And that's not, you know, going to necessarily break the bank. And then anything over 35,000 or 40,000 or so, right around there, that's when you're entering more of like, you know, and many times larger SUVs, luxury segment, and you're just going to see the most available supply for those used cars. And you'll also have the most, you know, negotiation leverage or just ability to get a better deal relative to, you know, the current market price. But again, that's when, you know, nowadays people need to afford those cars at an, you know, over 8% interest rate for a new car or 13% average interest rate for a used car. It gets really, really tough really, really quickly.
Yeah, that's I found that very interesting about how the 25 to 35, 40 range is your best bet just based upon value and, you know, interest and whatnot. So,
yeah, you're just competing with less people for that car, and it's still not too expensive for most people where it's like, okay, I just can't afford this.
Yeah.
So.
Uh-huh. And what's going on? I have to ask this. I bought a Model Y last January. How much of a bath am I taking on this right now?
So you're a great consumer because I wanted to say that you bought, January 22, right?
January 22, correct.
Beautiful, beautiful. You bought close to the peak. I love it. No, I'm just kidding.
It in August. No. It took that long to get it, I guess. So I bought it in August.
Oh, so you got it in August pricing.
Yes, August 21, correct.
Okay, so, you know, I don't know the exact price chart for Tesla, but it was probably a bit lower. Look, used Teslas, based on asking prices, are down 35%. In about, I want to say, I forget the exact time frame, but it's about a year or so, or maybe less, maybe a little bit less than that. So, you know, that's the price, just, and that's an average. So it could be mostly skewed toward Model Xs. It doesn't necessarily mean you took a bath. There's no doubt about it that, you know, the price is a lot lower than the broader market today. So if the broader market, I'm just making up a number right now, moved down, you know, 5 or 10%, whatever, you know, you probably moved down closer to 20. But look, at the end of the day, these things, I mean, you know, it can't time the market. A car is supposed to be a consumable. It's not necessarily, you know, an asset, and definitely not one that you expect to appreciate. So, you know, enjoy the ride. It's on the lower end. It's on the less expensive end for Tesla. So there's also more demand relative to the more expensive Model Xs and whatnot. And, And, you know, the best you can do is just enjoy it as much as possible and go from there.
You know, what's funny is a big reason into me buying it was that I thought it wouldn't depreciate as fast. What a fucking idiot I am, huh?
I know. Well, no, listen, it's definitely, it's definitely one of the hottest EVs out there, but it's Tesla. They obviously, used car prices have been coming down somewhat. And we'll talk about that soon as well, because it's a weird one. But Tesla crushed the market when they lowered all their prices. And the difference between Tesla and your every other brand in the market, to be clear, we're non-franchised. So I'm not associated with the brand. We're an independent, you know, used car group. But the difference is that Tesla controls their prices, right? It's direct to consumer. So they're the ones that are, you know, they're pushing the price up, down, left, right. And in the normal market, you know, no one likes it. It's obviously not a good thing, but there's a markups that these, you know, the new car dealers do, or not all of them, some dealers do it. And these markups are a way for the dealer to control the market and to based on demand. So that's sort of the difference here where, you know, on one hand, it's sort of like a free market where the dealers are controlling the price. On the other hand, Tesla, you know, both are at the end of the day changing prices, but you really don't know what's going to happen. So
did they say why they did that? Did you read anything of why they cut the prices like that? I thought it was because they did the credit went through, or the EV credit went through. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, EV credit was the big driver of that. And so they wanted to get into the, you know, to meet this threshold for when people can buy the car and get the EV credit, which is huge, because now you can buy a Tesla and certain Teslas and you get the EV credit, which is, you know, $1,700 in some cases, which is incredible. And then there was, you know, murmurs like maybe they have too much supply, maybe demand is slowing down, you know, all day above, you know, it's, there's no doubt that demand has slightly slowed across the board, slightly. But now it's kind of started picking up again in the last 45 days. So, you know, I think, you know, they know what they're doing. And again, now they're within the EV credit, you know, range. Right away after them, Ford went and started reducing some of their prices because they need to compete. And it's much tougher for Ford to do it because Ford is now losing money on some of its EVs at sale, which is crazy when you think about it. Tesla's not losing money on their sales. And, you know, just about 6 months ago, they had, you know, roughly, I think it was like three times the profit on each car they were selling, something crazy like that. And so, you know, they're definitely still in a good position, have a great supply chain, and, you know, they're making good money.
So why is Ford losing money on their EVs? Is it because it just takes, it costs them more to manufacture it opposed to Tesla?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Ford's a shit show right now. I think, you know, that when your CEO publicly declares that you're a shit show, it's I think that's pretty emblematic of what's going on.
He said that?
I hope they figure it out. Yeah, he didn't say the word shit show. I said that. But he said, I forget how he said, he's like, we're extremely inefficient. You know, we know we're a mess right now, something like that. So, you know, it's a company that's been around for a very long time. It's, you know, it's not founder-led. I'm not saying that that's the only difference here, but it definitely plays a part when you're around for, you know, 100 years or so. And, you know, their supply chain is not very tight right now. They have a lot of inefficiencies. Again, I don't know exactly what's happening internally. I'm only as good as what the CEO has publicly stated, but they just have a lot of inefficiencies across the company right now, and they need to work on that and fix that. So, you know, hopefully they figure it out. I sure hope so they do. And I'm sure, you know, other people do as well, but it's not easy. Supply chain, building cars is hard.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. So yeah, besides,
I don't build them. I don't build them. I just sell them. So
yeah, you just you just critique from 30,000 feet, which is easy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I just get a talk.
Exactly. So enough about me weeping about my personal story about my EV. Let's talk about EV in general. How noticeable is it? How this much is picking up besides just Tesla? Everything else that's coming out, you know, Cadillac's dropping a new one, and it just seems like it's really starting to take off. Or is that not as true from what you're seeing?
I think it's more in the news, and it's these, again, like these public proclamations by these car brands. Oh, we're going to be fully EV by this, by that. I mean, I think it's all just stupid, honestly. I think that, you know, number one, I think the future is going to be balanced. We're not going to go to this only EV right away. We're not going to stay internal combustion or, you know, typical gas engine as well. There needs to be some balance. You know, consumers like me and you and, you know, people listening to this podcast are all thinking, you know, do I want to, or some of them are thinking like, do I want to buy an EV? Do I not? And you'd be surprised that, you know, many people, or most people, I would say, that don't live on the coasts, are, they don't really care. For them, it's, you know, I want my truck, or I want this, or I want space. And it's less so about EV versus internal combustion. Look, I think EVs are going to continue growing. I'm a believer in EVs. I'm a believer in hybrid. And I think there's also going to always be a market for internal combustion. I think that's the not, you know, that's the unsexy view that most people, you know, you just don't hear as often, right? You see these people take these crazy positions, EV only by 2030, you know, EV is going to die off within a couple of years, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is, it's going to be a balanced future. You know, there's supply chain constraints for EVs, which are going to get worked out over time. But, you know, that obviously can hinder growth at some points. And that's it. I think ultimately the consumer is going to decide, you know, what car is better. It's not going to be only about it just saying, I have an EV, cool. Yeah, maybe in LA, you know, 60% of people want to buy an EV as their next car. The recent survey by True Car, which I think is probably true because it's LA. But other states, other cities, you know, people just have different cultures, different philosophies. And it's going to come down, you know, who builds the better overall car that, you know, for the everyday person at an affordable price, which frankly, that's where the market opportunity is today, to come out with a new car at an affordable price.
But besides Tesla, what have you found EV-wise that you believe is a pretty good value and seems to be holding up pretty well?
I don't have a great answer for that. I mean, I think, you know, between Nissan and Chevy, I mean, there's some EVs out there that, you know, some, there have been semi-popular, but I think Tesla is just, you know, they have stolen the show, at least in, you know, historically when it comes to EVs. And don't get me wrong, there's, you know, brands are catching up, and, you know, like the F-150 Lightning was a truck, of course, that Ford came out with. It's an EV. They've had some supply chain issues, but nonetheless, they had crazy reservations and early sales, and they paused sales, and now they restarted them, or they're planning on restarting. But I think overall, I don't think you're going to see. I think one thing that I talked to a lot of people, and I talked to people overseas, and it's very interesting that, you know, in different areas in like Europe and the Middle East or Asia, Tesla is not considered. It seems like Tesla doesn't have the type of brand loyalty or even affinity as you hear about in the US. You know, I just hear a lot more about their competition recently. And so, you know, if I was a Tesla shareholder, which I'm not, I would just be a little concerned about that. You know, is the market really going to catch up? And is that going to compress all margins? And is Tesla going to lose market share? But at the end of the day, you know, I think, you know, Elon's building a really strong company. He clearly has great leadership at that company. They have a massive head start. And so I'm sure they'll figure it out, even if they have to lower prices over time as competition catches up. But they're still by far stealing the show. As far as, you know, I can tell from our demand, it's Tesla is sort of the name of the game when it comes to EVs.
Gotcha.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
And going back to, you know, the tiers, like we'll call it the tiers, the tier one between, you know, 10,000 to 25 to 35, 40 and above. Can you give me, if you were going to buy a car today, three, not maybe say it would be your choice, but like really solid cars in those tiers that you think people should give a look at? And we're assuming good condition, like, you know, good mileage, like not, you know, nothing crazy, I guess.
And are you looking for used or new?
Let's go used. I think most people, like we said, you know, are buying used because everything is just so crazy now with the new market.
Look, we used is tricky simply because, you know, it depends on how it was maintained and the warranty and the mileage and whatnot. But there are some simple, you know, I've experienced a lot in this industry. Let's put it like that. Mm-hmm. I fixed a lot of cars. I've had a lot of issues. And there's just no doubt about it that Japanese cars, you know, Toyota, of course, Lexus is the luxury version of Toyota, Honda, even the Koreans, Kia and Hyundai in the last couple of years have really come a long way. it seems to be like those cars are simply the, they seem to be more reliable. And the second thing is their cost to repair and maintain is just a lot lower than, you know, German or even the domestics, you know, call it the big three in Detroit. So I typically, and even for myself, I bought a family member, I bought him a car just about a year ago. You know, I went Japanese. It was an inexpensive car, but again, I went Japanese because I didn't want to have to deal with headaches and cost to repair. And, you know, it's done pretty well. And again, that's one example, but I've seen over my years in this business that those cars seem to last the longest. They have the lowest cost to repair, and they're pretty reliable for the most part, with some, you know, very minor exceptions. Now, on the flip side of that, you know, what I just don't recommend is I never recommend German cars. So say, you know, BMW, Mercedes, Audi, over or around the 60,000 mile range, when, you know, they're out of that warranty phase and you start having to deal with the issues. Same goes for British cars or you know, Jaguar, Land Rover. The problem with these cars is that they're the most amazing fun cars to drive if you buy them new or if they have extremely low miles and you can truly, you know, enjoy them and not have to worry about the repairs and cost to maintain and whatnot, right? My wife drives a brand new Audi and it's amazing. We love it. It's sporty. It's fun to drive. And we don't have to worry about crazy expensive stuff because it's under warranty. Problem is when you cross that 50,000, 60,000 mile range, all these weird random issues start, whether it be electrical issues with, you know, the Land Rovers and the Jaguars, or oil leaks with the BMWs, and a bunch of other things. And, you know, it's a couple of things, right? These cars are expensive to maintain, more expensive than your average, you know, Japanese car or Korean. They have expensive components on them, right? Like the fact that your butt gets heated and the door suction closes and, you know, you have all these crazy fancy gadgets, like that stuff breaks, right? It's a machine. It's a gadget. It's technology. It breaks. And it just becomes a big headache over time when you carry that. So, you know, typically what I say is stay away from that kind of stuff. If you're trying to buy something to get you from point A to point B, stick to the Japanese, the Koreans, if you can. Of course, you know, you still want to do your due diligence, but I think that those, the German cars, you're just going to have bigger headaches with them, and you're going to find yourself spending more time in the shop than at the wrong mile. Of course, you buy it over 60K, you're going to be more in the shop than you will be driving it. Now, I want to say one thing. Obviously, there's nuances. Of course, you know, you're going to get someone that's going to, you know, suddenly DM you and say, oh, but CDG, I have a BMW with 200,000 miles and it's never leaked. Yeah, I get it. Like, that happens. But you guess what? You're the exception. You're not the norm. If I had a dollar for every BMW that we purchased and it leaked, it's just like it's common and it happens all the time and it's annoying and expensive to repair. So, you know, be very, very, very thoughtful when you're making that car purchase.
So on the flip side, I guess if you are driving a new one and you're creeping up towards that 50, 60,000 mile range, like would you say it's time to dump it?
You know, I typically like to laugh on Twitter and people get pissed. I say BMWs are for leasing, not for purchasing, which is really, you know, it's like a funny little line, but it's pretty, it has some good meaning to it, which is, you know, dump it at that mileage, unless you want to get stuck with the repairs, which you probably don't, or most people don't. I just get rid of it, you know, you get rid of it, get something, you know, again, a new one with lower miles, or unless it's, you know, super, super well maintained and you're comfortable with keeping it beyond that.
And what are your thoughts on that too? Because obviously, like I said, I went through the process 2 years ago and leasing is getting pushed pretty heavy. And I assume that's because a dealership, it makes more money. They do a deal once, someone brings it back, and then they do a deal again, or maybe even one more time. What are your thoughts on people who have to go through the decision leasing versus buying?
So it's not necessarily true. I mean, you know, the amount of money made on a car is, you know, it doesn't, not true that you make more in leasing. What I will tell you is that leasing was just a lot more, it was a lot more attractive a couple years ago, right? So just, you know, the leasing is made up of a bunch of different factors. There's like a thing called money factor. You have residual values, which just means, you know, what is this car worth when I return it? And it's almost like a math equation, right? And the problem is that leasing was attractive back then because in theory you could get into a car, a new car, for, you know, a lower price than it would be if you were buying it, right? So been very attractive. I can get the same car, I'm paying less per month, right? But okay, whatever. I just don't get to keep it after 3 years. Who really cares about that? I will deal with it then. That's sort of the mindset. It also provides a lot of convenience because, again, it's not my car and, you know, they can do all the maintenance for me and blah, blah, blah. Now, the problem is that since the inventory shortage, leasing has become a lot less attractive. And there's other reasons for that as well. But today, if you go back a couple of years ago, leasing was about, you know, over 30% of all cars, new cars that were purchased, right? So almost one in three cars was leased. Today, that number is getting closer to like one in 10 cars or like one in nine. It's a lot less attractive today to lease because you have less inventory on the roads. And so, you know, leasing is less competitive. And it's also gotten more expensive with where rates are at and all the residual value risk that OEMs took, which just means that, you know, people, the car values went up, cost to produce cars went up. And so there's like a lot of different factors that have made lease less attractive today. And that's why it's going down in market share, because it's just you're not getting as good of a deal as you would have a couple years back. Now, again, of course, there's exceptions to this as well. Some brands, you know, you'll see some deals on leases. I think I saw Volvo recently had a pretty good deal at Costco or something like that. But I don't really keep up with leases too much. Because it's a whole field on its own, and there's people that know about it way more than me. But the bottom line is it's less attractive than it was a couple years back. But there's still some deals that you could find here or there.
What about these companies like the Carvanas of the world? What are they doing to the market? Because you talk about people trading it in, or you know they were offering like screaming deals for a while, right? Can you get into what? And I think did they declare for bankruptcy?
No, they haven't. They haven't declared for bankruptcy. They have a lot of issues. The company has way too much debt. And look, I think most consumers I've spoken with have enjoyed the buying from Carvana. The ones that have, right? They've enjoyed the process or selling to them. Now, that's not all, right? There's horror stories. I sold my car. I didn't get this, or I bought a car and had issues. Whatever. Carvana took a big bet, right? They built on top of a 20 or 15-year-old dealership business that was nationwide. They said, let's, you know, take this big bet. They made a lot of questionable choices along the way. You know, management has a pretty checkered, or the chairman has a checkered history. And so people just never really trust them since day one. I actually, and this is why you should never take stock advice from me, because I actually believed in the company at a certain point. As an industry insider, I was not focused on too much at the time on the financials and all that stuff, right? Like I just said, okay, let me buy a car thing. Let me test the process, right? The process was great. Like I said, wow, this is actually a really easy to buy a car, and their technology is amazing. And as someone that, you know, I really appreciate their technology, I said they're going to make it because they know what they're doing. Now, obviously, there's way more to a company beyond just technology, and that. And clearly, I've been proven wrong in that sense that the company, their entire finances, it's a mess. And they purchased an auction about a year ago for way too much money now. They have too much debt, and it's not looking good. They've burned, you know, billions of dollars or something since they've launched. So they haven't made a buck, which also doesn't help their case, especially in the market environment we're in. So I think Carvana is not heading down a good path. I don't know what their options are going to be at given all the debt they have on the company and the market environment we're in, where used cars, it's a very volatile market, and it's a lot tougher to, you know, keep up and make consistent profits on these used cars. But hey, if you're a consumer and you can take advantage and get a good deal, go for it. You know, it's a car by car basis. Remember, it's a computer prices most of their cars. And so you can sometimes find deals here and there with Carvana. It's not so crazy to think about. But other than that, you know, I'm not too bullish on the future of that company anymore.
Yeah, and I should have described it a little bit beforehand. So to my knowledge, Carvana, basically they took away the old school, go walk into the dealership policy, and they all purchase them. They pick them up, they drop them off. And like you said, it's all priced by a computer, correct? Did I do a good job summing it up?
Yeah, that's at least, you know, that was the thesis, is like, hey, you know, you buy a car online. Now, and you have to remember one other thing, that dealers, most dealers have caught up, right? Carvana launched in 2012 and really in 2013 as a spin out of another company called DriveTime. And it's been about 10 years since they launched, and the industry has just caught up, right? There's been tons of VC money invested, tons of new technology. There's been exits already for this new technology. And so dealers today are a lot more digitally savvy than they were 10 years ago. And consumers, like, you know, me and you could, or any consumer for that matter, can do a lot more in order to buy a car before they ever get to the dealership. I want to say like 95% of consumers, you know, do a portion of the car buying process online, which makes sense. We do have everything online nowadays. But it's a lot more, it's just a lot easier to work with a dealer and go through an online process. There's more transparency. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Some dealers are better than others. But at the end of the day, you have a lot more options nowadays when it comes to buying a car online, whether it be CarMax, you know, your traditional used car dealer in your local market, or Carvana.
Let's talk about financing for a minute here. I saw you tweet the other day that I think it was Truist Bank. They're getting out of the auto loan game completely. And obviously, if you're following, especially we did a podcast on this last week, the Silicon Valley Bank thing. What's going on with auto loans?
Yeah, auto loans is a tricky area right now. What's happening is that subprime consumers are getting squeezed. And so Truist Bank has a subsidiary called Regional Acceptance. There's another bank called Santander, which they do subprime auto loans. Of course, there's Capital One, there's Ally. There's plenty of banks that do these loans. Problem is that they're all spooked after what happened recently with the banking crisis with Silicon Valley Bank and whatnot. And that's not the only reason, right? Rates have gone up. That's making it tougher for subprime consumers to get into a car. But you're pretty much seeing tightening all across the board for, you know, any consumer that's, call it, below 620 credit score or so. And again, that's a rough range. It's just tougher to finance a car because these lenders are significantly tightening up. And so, and again, I actually just posted this morning on my Twitter. By the way, follow me on Twitter at Guy Dealership. This is where, you know, I post all this stuff, at Guy Dealership on Twitter. But I actually posted this morning that there's way tighter lending conditions now in the market. And so, and this is actually, I found this fascinating, but today, 1 in 11 U.S. borrowers is actually getting rejected for an auto loan. Wow. And if you go back to 2021, pretty much almost everyone got approved for an auto loan. And so it's just getting a lot tougher to buy, to finance the car. And these big banks are like, nope, I'm out. They're tightening their conditions. They don't want to lend as much. They want to take less risk on every single car. And it's all, you know, it's all brewing, and we're only the beginning. So it's going to be interesting to see how this unfolds throughout the rest of the year.
Yeah, things are changing, huh? A couple more questions here. What about, and you know, maybe you have insights to what's about to come and the future of just the models. This is a silly question, I acknowledge that, but I'm disheartened with the way that SUVs look nowadays. I hate that they're all rounded off and they all look like
minivans. You said SUVs?
Yes, they're all like, so many of them are so ugly now, man. You know, they just look rounded off and everything looks the same. And are we going to get away from that? I know, I believe like it was part of like gas efficiency and whatnot. So everybody changed these SUVs to look the same. But so many classic vehicles that had so much character have just disappeared. Do you understand what I'm saying a little bit, just the way they look?
Yeah, it's funny because everything is, I mean, look, it's funny, like look at the Cybertruck and how Elon's trying to go in such a different direction there. And then, you know, now I posted a Kia Telluride, which is a cool looking SUV. They're coming out with an EV model, and it's really cool. It's they made it different. I actually like the design, but I think overall design, I got a lot of heat when I posted this. It's not a meme. It was an image, but it's called, I wrote, "Design is Dead." And you just see like all these cars that when you kind of strip them of their wheels and you put them side by side, they almost look the same.
Yeah.
So, it's crazy how everything eventually conforms and everything becomes, you know, comes down to cost. If I had to guess, like, it's just about how can we build it the cheapest way possible and scare off the least amount of consumers. But we've definitely hit that point in the cycle where everything is, you know, not everything, but most looks and most designs are in a way converging. And I do believe that.
Dude, it's crazy. Like, I just have to believe at some point someone's going to go, oh, we got to break the trend. Like, we're not standing out because they all look the fucking same. It drives me nuts.
Well, I mean, what'd you drive for the Model Y?
I get my mom gave me her 2009 Mercury Mariner. That's why it was just a beater. It was just a dump.
Oh man, the Mariner. We used to sell a ton of those back in the day, and Mercury's in general. I mean, dude, it's, those cars, they did well. People loved them. They were like boats. The Mariner was a smaller one, but you know, you had like the Grand Marquis and all that, the Le Sabre, and they were bigger. And These things were like boats. People loved them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was...
By the way, speaking about Buick, I mean, I posted about this earlier in the year, that Buick had like this insane amount of supply. And I was like, you know, if you're willing to suffer the embarrassment of being seen in a Buick, like, go buy one, because you'll probably get a good deal. And it was sort of a joke, but it went viral. I think it did like 4 million views on Twitter. And it's funny because Twitter has been selling like crazy since then. Again, I'm not claiming it's because of my tweet. I'm sure it brought awareness to it, because 4 million is a lot of impressions, but they've just had some decent deals. And honestly, the car's a nice, it's a pretty nice car nowadays. They've done well with the design, but the problem is that they need to rebrand the fucking logo. The logo kills me, because it's, people still see it, they're like, oh, I don't want a Buick. Or in my comments, people are like, oh, my grandma had that car. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly the point. That's why people don't want it, because the first thing you think about is your grandma. Like, most people don't want to buy that as their, you know, their first, second, third car. So that's my hot take on Buick.
No, you're right. I ran the gamut when I was looking, and Buick had a lot of nice looking stuff. They really did. But there's something about, I don't know if it's the name, but then again, the name's kind of cool, because it's like the old like mob movies and shit like that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Buick's an interesting one. And we do have a sponsorship with Chevy. Can you tell me anything good? Tell me something good about Chevy. Like, what can people look into? What do you like about Chevy?
What can I tell you about Chevy? So look, I'll tell you that. I'll say right now that Chevy has, There's a lot of Chevy trucks on the market right now. They've done well with their supply chain, so they're clearly, you know, whether it's definitely a function of supply and demand. But the bottom line is Chevy has trucks on the market right now, and I would say that you probably have a better chance of getting a good deal on a Chevy than a Chevy truck than a foreign truck today. So Chevy trucks are at about 90-day supply, which is just a fancy term for how many of these trucks are on the market relative to the amount of demand, and how long would it take till they all sell out? That's how the industry tracks inventory availability, right? And Chevys are at 90-day supply, which is, you know, roughly more or less, you know, 50% higher than what you typically see on an average with other cars and trucks. And so the bottom line is there's a lot of Chevy trucks entering the market. They're on the market nowadays, and you could probably get some pretty good deals on them if you're in the market for a truck, with rebates, or whatever, you know, other incentives that Chevy's willing to offer. So I would, you know, I think they're good trucks, and I would take a look at a Silverado if you're in the market for that.
Yeah, and what's interesting, we just talked about things that all these SUVs look the same. Now it's become the pickup trucks have basically just become nice SUVs in a sense, right? Like they're, and yeah. I think I saw you post that too. What's the size of the average truck bed from back in the day to now?
Yeah, I mean, the average truck bed from back in the day is way, way down. And I don't know the exact size, but it's significant. I mean, we know back then, I think we actually used trucks for hauling. Nowadays, you know, most consumers don't buy a truck to haul anything. Most consumers buy a truck as a, and this got a lot of heat, but someone called it like a glorified minivan, or like a minivan without the doors. It was pretty funny. So I don't necessarily agree with that, but I think that, you know, most trucks nowadays, it's definitely not someone buying it to haul anything. It's for personal reasons, taste. It used to be, you know, affordable, maybe a little less so now, and maybe the truck sales will come down, but it's definitely more of like a personal thing than actually needing to move stuff around.
Yeah, no, I disagree with that. I think it's like the nicest looking SUV, because that's kind of what I consider it now, because the bed is so shrunk, and the back seat of some of those Silverados are just luxury. It's nice back there, you know?
Yeah, so. I mean, you go to the Sun Belt and, you know, just in general, go to the South, and there's way more trucks than, you know, like the North, the Northeast, and all these metros. So trucks have always been hot in the U.S. I mean, the Ford F-150 is the number one selling car for like, you know, centuries in a row or whatever. And, you know, so trucks will always do well in America.
Yeah, definitely. Well, all right, then. I want to be respectful of your time and whatnot, but is there anything else you could leave us with? Anything that you got your eye on? Any fun fact about the markets that we didn't get to that you think people would find interesting?
No, I'm trying to see what you have in front of your computer. What is it, a beef kit? Tell me about this. What is this?
A beef kit. So are you allowed to say what region you're from, or where you're from, or do you not, you know?
No, I'm from the East Coast.
Okay, East Coast. So have you ever come to Chicago?
I've been to Chicago, a couple years back.
So we have these Italian beefs. I don't know if you had one while you were out here. So what you do with this beef kit is you're able to make your own Italian beef. So we'll have to send you one. And it gets you started on that. It's like, you know, it's Chicago's version of the cheesesteak or whatever. So that it's great stuff.
Well, that's the deep dish pizza now.
Yeah. Well, we got that. We got, you know, the Chicago hot dog. There's a bunch of things. But beef is like one of our most original things. So go to tasterealchicago.com if anyone wants to buy one.
Nice. Look, this has been great. And I think if you're in the market for a car, just be patient. It will get better. Eventually, but it's going to be a tough ride. So, you know, if you can hold on to your car longer so you don't have to pay these exorbitant interest rates or whatever it may be, and just still high prices on used, but it will get better. And I think it's, again, super interesting market, very fluid. You know, follow along, and I'll just keep sharing what I'm seeing on the ground floor. I've been having a blast doing it, and I hope you enjoy my memes on the way as well.
So. Well, I certainly enjoy them. One more time, tell people your Twitter. I know you got a YouTube page that's coming up. Plug it all, whatever's coming up.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, so again, on Twitter, just Guy Dealership, G-U-Y Dealership. That's my @, or you can just write Car Dealership Guy. And I am launching a podcast as well, so really excited about that. I was pretty hesitant for a while, so, you know, I commend you know, people like yourself that do this and religiously, and you're very... you know, you're able to do it on a week in and week out. It's something that I never thought I would do, but I'm really looking forward to it. I started doing a couple just impromptu Twitter spaces. People asked me some really good questions, and I said, you know what? Why not? Like, why not me? Why not create a podcast? Right? Clearly, I have stuff that people find interesting to share. So why not do an audio format? And who knows where it's going to go? Just like the Twitter account, which was sort of like a joke initially, and it's blown up to what it is today. So looking forward to that. You can find that on YouTube or podcast. Again, same thing. I think it's at Guy Dealership as well, or Car Dealership Guy. So just follow along, subscribe. And I'm really excited to bring everyone just more knowledge, stories, data about where the market's headed.
Perfect. I couldn't recommend it enough. No joke. It's a fascinating Twitter account, and that's why we're doing this today. So Car Dealership Guy, thank you. I'd love to do it again sometime if you're interested. Yeah. And that's it. Thank you again.
I love it. Thanks, Eddie. Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. That's it for today. That's it for this week. We will see you all on Monday.